Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today, we examine a topic that is core and key to spiritual practice, and that, of course, is the subject of and topic of meditation. It's been said that there are as many meditation techniques as there are people, and what that means is that there is one that is just right for us. However, it can be quite complicated finding one, therefore. Today, I'm joined by a teacher of meditation and yoga with over 35 years of teaching experience to help us find out how inherently simple meditation is. So relax, it's simple, folks. We don't have to fuss over this. We can naturally come to this beautiful thing called meditation. And so it's by the way, she's also a spiritual counselor and a radio personality too. So it's a pleasure to welcome Diana to our show today. Diana Lang, the author of Opening to Meditation. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul. So nice to be on your show.
You know, you call your book A Gentle Guided Approach, right? You teach that meditation at heart is very simple. And we complicate it, don't we? And I mean, there's 1,000 books written on meditation and so many people teaching so many different kinds, you know, inherently it's a simple thing.
Right, and partly, you know, having taught for such a long time to so many kinds of people that had never meditated before, one of the goals of this book was to show how simple it was, that anybody can do it right now. The whole book is meditation. It was written in a meditative state, and I wanted, you know, just by reading it, you kind of get into that state of meditation or peace inside the self. So, you know, because of the variety of people I've taught and the styles of meditation I've studied, just about everyone that I could find, there are things that are in common, you know, so that there are things that are alike in every form of meditation, and those are the things that I call out in the book so that people can do it in a very simple way by taking a breath.
Well, and like all deceptively simple things, you know, they are just that, aren't they? Deceptively simple. There's a lot of work that goes into it. You know, I always love what Miles Davis said about jazz. You know, it's the notes that were left out are the most important ones, and I think that's true with a book like this. You know, it's to get it down to something simple that's just 93 pages or whatever. Takes a lot of focus and effort. So, and I like the book. It's very easy to read, deceptively so. But there's a lot of valuable information. In fact, we're gonna go through it. You mentioned that meditation is an accelerator, and I find that quite fascinating because Charles Fillmore, who's the co-founder of Unity and the Unity movement, he says that prayer is the most highly accelerated mind action known to humanity, the most highly accelerated mind action. And you're saying meditation is an accelerator, almost saying identically the same things, right? And I love it because I believe it's true. It's in some unknown way, because often we don't see what's going on. We don't see the results initially. But every time we meditate, as you put it, we put down another layer, a greater stability and foundation for practice, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I liken it sometimes to when you start a meditation practice, it's like planes circling at an airport waiting for the control tower to say, okay, you can land now. And what happens in our life as time goes by, we got a lot of planes in the air, you know, and those are all subjects of our life, like, you know, relationship with our mother or our health or whatever it be. And those planes are just floating, you know, circling and circling. And when you start to meditate, they start to land. And I think people sense this, you know, because they sense that, uh-oh, change is going to happen. And that is for sure, change is going to happen, but it's for our highest good, you know?
I like that. I like that analogy. You know, that this, it's, we're like jugglers, aren't we, with so many plates or balls in the air sometimes. And it can be quite distracting and frustrating. Not to mention exhausting, you know. And so the idea they're coming home to land is a nice idea. You know, they're back home again, all up there and being juggled. And I know a lot of people these days feel that way. You know, they feel very distracted by their lives. There's so many things that are pulling them in so many directions. And meditation is the antidote for that. I've always liked the idea that, you know, I may not recognize that my plane has landed initially, but after a while I notice a difference and I realize, oh, wait a minute, something's happening as a result of my discipline here, my willingness to meditate. And I think that's the power. So many of us give up on practices because we don't see immediate results. And that's another problem we have in our Western society, you know, instant gratification. Meditation practice to me is a slow practice over years, right?
Definitely. However, when I teach a meditation course, when it goes for some weeks, sometimes I'll do them like that, where there'll be, you know, 4 weeks where there's meeting.
Right.
If a person is actually doing that meditation during that period, they will experience change in that little bit of time. And it's just incredible, actually. People call out of the blue, you know, you know, the person you haven't talked to for 19 years writes a letter, you know, resolution, the planes land, the planes begin to land, and they land in perfect timing. They don't all land at once, you know, and I think the fear is they're all going to land at once, and we've got to keep them in the air, you know, and so we stay away from our feelings and stay away from our spiritual next steps, not trying to, but just unconsciously to protect ourselves from, you know, being overwhelmed, I suppose.
What you're saying is that there's a divine order that governs the universe, right? Wow.
Yes.
What a revelation. And we can actually cooperate with that divine order. Instead of trying to fix it and control it and make it happen for ourselves, we can actually relax and allow the amazing power of God, if you like, or the intelligence of the universe to be there for us. And it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I think when we reach those aha moments, you know, those breakthrough moments, it's like, oh my God, why was I fussing so much? You know, everything is wonderful. Everything is in perfect order. I can just relax. And it's a wonderful moment of sloughing off all that, excess that we really didn't need.
Yeah, I call that navigating by epiphany.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. I like that. Yeah.
You know, which is really saying navigating by love, moving by love, moving by heart, moving by God, moving by, you know, spirit, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And it all starts, of course, if the divine order has a name, I think its name is stillness, isn't it? It's that still point of the turning world that T.S. Eliot talked about. And there's a lovely quote here on page 5, I think it is. Let me read it. It's from Lao Tzu, and it says, be still, for stillness and tranquility hold the secrets of the universe. And that is meditation there in a nutshell, really, isn't it? In those two simple lines.
Yes. And, you know, I often will say, you know, to new students, you know, don't be afraid of yourself. you know, because there's this world inside of us that's as big and maybe bigger than the world that's outside of us. And mm-hmm. it is, and that we are afraid of that, but it is, it's our essence, it's our true self, it is a gift. And when you get into, to me, meditation is the relationship, you know, between the soul and the self. And it's a way to have that dialogue and have that relationship where you begin to inner reflect and inner and go by inner guidance rather than, you know, what the world says or what the parents said or the government says. You know, you start to move from the inside out. And then what's beautiful with that, that is just a little side byproduct, is the inner and the outer become more and more alike so that you feel more authentic in the life, not trying to act some way or be some way, that you actually are that way because the inside and the outside are matching.
And I want to talk about that later too, because part of one of the sections of your book is about know it by heart, right? And and I think that's a profound, that's exactly what you're saying. So when you know it to be true, you know, there's no more trying. It just is effortless. It's a natural thing. You may be familiar with the last interview that Carl Jung gave. And at the end of the interview, the interviewer asked him, do you believe in God? And he said no. And of course, there's that moment of, you know, pregnant pause where you think, oh my gosh, he didn't believe in God. And he says, I don't believe anymore. I know. And I've always loved that because the shift was from, you know, it's a nice idea. You know, I think I believe in it, to no, I've experienced that reality and I know it to be true. And then when we know it to be true, we can do amazing things, can't we? I think a sportsman or woman reaches that stage when they are no longer trying to do something. They are in the zone, if you like, and they're just doing it effortlessly. And it becomes a very beautiful and poetic thing, almost. The grace of their movement is tremendous in those moments of just being completely in the zone.
Exactly. It's that old, you know, you'll see it when you believe it versus I'll believe it when I see it. You know?
Yeah, there we go.
And it starts to be the way you live by heart through your life, through our lives. You start to be authentic to everything, to yourself, you know, to the world. And that translates as presence, right? I mean, that would be a good word to say it. And certainly a kind of power and maybe even charisma. There is a kind of strength in that that is trustable because it's true. You know, it's not a manufactured strategy or an agenda. It's the real thing, you know, insight.
Right, right. You know, the catch-22 on all this, though, is that that you know, the wings don't appear until we jump, right? We have to jump before we're lifted up on eagles or angels' wings, and I think it's the fear. Well, maybe the wings won't sprout, you know. That keeps us back, you know. But they're not going to sprout unless we dare to jump, to risk something, to actually do it, right? It's the same with falling in love. I mean, if we wait, oh, I don't know if this is going to work out, well, we'll never know. You know, we have to risk that, don't we?
Absolutely. I talk about it in this way of living with an unguarded heart.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the guarded heart says, well, when this happens then, or, you know, we have so many conditions, and how can you just stand there with an open heart, period, you know? And it's very, so much courage to do that. It's so brave to live by heart, because every instinct in us wants to protect that vulnerability, but that vulnerability is the strength, you know?
Right, yeah. You know, like Elvis said, we can't go on together with suspicious minds, you know. You know, as long as you're suspicious about everything going down, it's all going to go wrong. You know, that's a spiritual principle, though, isn't it? Job said, you know, the thing that I feared has come upon me, because he spent so much time in fear or suspicion or not trusting or whatever it might be, that or being guarded, that we could, you know, we can never experience the joy, you know. And that's a child doesn't do that. A child jumps, right? A child is spontaneous, and I think that part of the whole practice is to get back to that immediacy that a child has, you know, that we lose through education, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right. And just getting older in life, you know, it got beaten out of us, you know, one way or another, and all becomes, you know, being more and more perfect, trying
yes.
to, you know, please and or rebel against, you know, either way. But it's really the same thing. It's just a fear response.
Yes.
And so when you're in a meditative state or a spiritual life, you start to live by love, you live by heart, and you and that, you know, Daryl Jumpalski beautiful quote, you know, love or, there's only two emotions, love or fear. And I love that because it's such, if it's not love, it is fear. And, you know, and that covers a lot of territory.
It absolutely
what's
does.
Not yet, love, right?
And yet it's, like we said earlier, it's inherently simple, isn't it? It's a simple mm-hmm. choice there, which, you know, when I was in seminary at Unity Village, one of the professors said, there's only two words you need to know. And when you become clear and enlightened, excuse me a minute. Sorry about that, folks. When you become, you know, awakened, the two words that arise are clarity and simplicity. And mm-hmm. you mentioned that too, don't you, about pure intention and clarity leads to this sense of trust and restfulness that is some of the hallmarks of meditation.
Yes. Yes. And one of the things that I talk about is the idea of moving on an axis that's a dimensional axis, and the downline, if you think of a cross, the downline is truth and the cross line is love. And when you stand at the nexus of those of where those two lines cross, that is consciousness. Because truth by itself can have no mercy, right? And love by itself can be too soft. And when you blend those things together, it is that clear light, that clarity, like you say.
Yes, very good. And, you know, we have to work with paradox, don't we? Because that's the nature of the universe. You know, we're a particle and we're a wave at the same time, you know. But we have to be comfortable with being both and rather than one or the other. Jesus understood it. You know, he said, be wise as serpents, but innocent as doves. And that's exactly what you're saying, too. You know, to be grounded, right, to be of the world, but not so taken up with it that we can't spread our wings and fly like a dove with all its innocence. And you know,
exactly.
Blending those two together is, you know, being nobody's fool and yet not being suspicious either. It seems like a paradox, a conundrum, and yet I think that's the grace that comes to us. So for instance, I think Jesus, you know, the way he treated some of the Pharisees, you know, with those verbal swords that went straight to the heart, you know, he was tough.
Yes.
But he was
yes.
also, you know, incredibly loving and compassionate being, too. So, interesting
stuff,
isn't it?
And he sort of spoke in riddles, in a way, probably in their minds, you know, because he
yes.
sort of asked questions to the questions.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah, they thought he was trying to slip away. You know, he wouldn't answer,
yeah.
you know. Very interesting. Folks, I'm with a lovely lady named Diana Lang. She's written a book called Opening to Meditation, which is a great book. It's deceptively simple, but it's a gentle, guided approach to meditation. Covers all the salient points in a very easy to digest format, which is always good. And we're going to talk more about the elements of meditation and in our next segment. And so join us after these messages from Unity.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Wellness expert Dr. Michelle Robin on Healthy Living.
In the game of wellness, there's some basic habits that you need to embrace in order to live a well life.
In her book, Wellness on a Shoestring, Robin shows you that complete wellness of body, mind, and spirit doesn't have to cost a fortune. Client Eddie Penrice turned his health around with Dr. Robin's 7 Habits for a Healthy Life.
I've got to say my body just embraced the change. Besides feeling better, looking better, thinking more clearly.
Many of Robin's 7 habits for a healthy life are simple and free. She offers tips and shares real stories from clients like Eddie, who've incorporated the habits into their lives and seen the results.
You can make this change by being convicted that you will do it, that you don't need anyone else's assistance or help to do it.
Make this the year you get healthy. Discover a low-cost, attainable path to feeling better than ever. Order wellness on a shoestring today at www.shopunity.org.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants 5 Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
Welcome back to today's show. I'm with Diana Lang talking about her book, Opening to Meditation. And if you've never meditated, you're going to find this book very helpful as a primer. If you have meditated for many years, you're going to find this book very helpful because it's comes from someone who knows what they're talking about and therefore can speak and write with authority. And it's done in a gentle way. It's called a gentle guided approach. And that's part of the joy of the book. It's not laying a trip on us. It's gently leading us through and guiding us through these steps. And we talked about the stillness being the core of what meditation is. And one of the wonderful ways to enter into that stillness, of course, is in this mystic thing called breathing. We do it every day without thinking. But really, breathing is the spiritual path in a nutshell, isn't it? Because it's the giving and receiving. It's the flow of the universe, and we do it naturally to sustain our lives.
Right. And most people, if they actually check themselves, they're often holding their breath. You know, mm-hmm. We're holding our breath because we're concentrating. We're holding our breath because we're nervous. We're holding our breath because we're afraid. We're holding our breath. And if you think of that, you know, holding a breath, it's like not living, not diving into the experience or being fully present to an experience. And so we create this little buffer zone around ourselves by holding our breath.
Right. And we hold, therefore, our stomachs or our solar plexus, you know, we tighten our muscles there and we end up with feeling stressed out, you know, and all kinds of things. Actually, I read the other day, too, that we breathe very shallow breaths, you know, and that if we were totally in tune, we would only breathe like a couple of times, 3 or 4 times a minute. And instead, we breathe, you know, 5 or 6 times that much. You know, we do notice when we meditate, don't we, as we relax, our breathing slows down, becomes deeper, and it's a whole different beast, you know, that we don't need to be breathing this superficial breath so much.
Right. Plus all of the physiology that happens when we hold our breath that creates stress hormones and chemical reactions in the body and creates different states of disease,
right.
You know, and right. that tension, I mean, to me, all disease is stress related on some level, you know, I think at its core. And, you know, finally, if we really want to heal, we need to address, you know, the inner meaning of the illness in the first place. You know, why are we having this experience is some kind of disconnect, you know.
Absolutely.
And that we can heal ourselves. And to the degree we can, you know, it depends on the problem, I suppose. But I've seen literal miracles where people shouldn't be alive, and they are, because they began to have this relationship with their higher self or their soul or with God.
And the thing, I know you agree with this, we can use many modalities, can't we? We don't have to not go to the doctor or take medication just because we're meditating. We can use both and again.
If we're
guided that way, I think it's perfectly valid. It's just when we depend on, the external aids to the exclusion of our own inner wisdom that there's an imbalance, I think. One of the things you say is trust yourself, right?
Yeah.
It's all within us.
I have t-shirts with that on it.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, but trust yourself with a capital S, right? Because it's not trust the ego, because the ego will take you on a wild goose chase for sure.
Yeah.
So the self, right?
Trust the core of who you are, the natural beauty, right, and elegance of who you are as a spiritual being, I guess, is what we're talking about.
Yeah, and beginning to navigate by that spirit, by navigating by epiphany in that way, right? You're starting to feel, know the answers to things, or just getting those impulses to make the call or go to this doctor or use this food as a healing modality, whatever way we're guided, ourself knows. And everybody's answer, of course, is unique and different.
Yes, yeah, and that's the beauty of it, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's no formula.
No, there is no formula. Yeah. I think that's what frustrates people sometimes on the spiritual path. They want to be given the 10 points that are going to save their lives and transform everything. And we have many books that show all these, point, do this, do that. And that can help to a degree. I mean, Buddhism is famous for it, isn't it? There's the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Six Perfections, the 12, chains of dependency, whatever. And in Christianity, too, we have the three, the Holy Trinity, and then we have the 12 disciples, and we have this, that, and the other. So, we can codify it to a degree, but ultimately, as Jesus said again, it's like the wind, it comes and goes as it will. And if you try and box the wind, it just ain't wind anymore, and that's the thing. It has to do its thing. It has to be free, and since we are of that, that's our nature too.
Right, and when you start to meditate or have that inner relationship, you begin to be able to sense into things without words, without books, without anybody telling you anything. You can start to move through life and know, and I would use that with a capital K, mm-hmm. to really know by your own experience, not by anything that you've heard, but to let yourself in your life be guided by spirit. It changes everything, and it gets a lot easier too,
Yeah, it does.
You don't have to take a class. And there's a temptation in writing to say, the seven steps to spirituality or like you were saying, all those. And I don't know. I've read a lot in my life, as you have, obviously, of just about everything on spirituality that there is. And, whether I agreed or didn't agree, I got as much out of the things I didn't agree with fully as I did from the things I did, because you kind of glean, from the deeper meaning, even of the intention of the writer, that they're making some point, right? And I can benefit from that. And I think my whole book's written in that sense, style too, is that there's a very deep sincerity in the way that I am expressing these ideas that is beyond my brain.
Yes.
And like you said, it's simple, and it is very difficult to write simply, because it's so tempting to want to prove it or to have evidence, procedure or something that the ego would like, and to put something out there and just put it on the table and say, here's what it is, and offer that without any, hoopla, and no jargon even, you're just offering something in the innocent state. People that can sense will feel that, that sincerity and sort of the innocent honesty of that position.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the Buddha's first sermon, I think, when he was gathered with people, he had a breakthrough moment. There was no one there to recognize it with him, so he touched the earth, so the earth would be his witness. But then when people did gather, he just lifted up a flower, and nobody really understood except one disciple what the significance of that affirmative gesture was, you know, and I guess he was the original hippie, right? He was lifting up a flower, but the idea is, you know, it's as simple as that. You know, it's as simple as the way things are, right? Be present to what is. And that's another thing you talk a lot about. And this, one of the things that's on my business card and on my emails or whatever is that simple line, you know, be present to what is, because I think if we can be, and it's like you say, it's not be present to everything I like. It's to be present to what is. Some things you like, some things you don't, but you can learn from everything. And sometimes the resistance can be our greatest teacher. You know, the things that we didn't think there was anything to find in are the ones, the places where the treasure is. So, but to be present, you know, and that's meditation too, isn't it? It's simply being present.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the bottom line in a way. You know, one of the things, going back a little bit back to what you were saying, I wanted to just say one more thing, too, about this presence and all of that, is I ask my students this often, if Jesus appeared in the room, would you know it, you know? And that I believe that when you were innerly connected, you could know that. But I think most people might not, because we want it to look a certain way or have a certain thing about it that is recognizable, but it might be in the most unrecognizable thing, you know, that, and still by energy and by sense, you can feel spirit, you can feel the sacred. And the sacred is in everything, of course, but some people hold more wattage, you know, than others, and meditating creates more wattage.
And, you know, if Jesus did appear, he probably wouldn't be dressed in, you know, first century robes with long hair, right? He would show up as Mr. Rogers or somebody like that.
You know, with some,
or she, exactly. You know, in the least expected place, you know, I've come across people that, you know, I felt were, you know, highly evolved, and they're just, you know, sweeping the floor or whatever. They're not doing something, you know, dramatic. They are totally present and real, and you know that they're got something to emanate and teach there. So they are. I think the Christ can show up in all kinds of places, can't it?
Yes, and vice versa, in the sense that not everyone that would say they're spiritual necessarily are. You know, it goes both ways, and we've seen lots of examples of that, you know, and as things get exposed sometimes, you know, it's so sad. But I think it's just, you know, how do you move through the world and sort of recognize light, you know, and sacredness? And it can be in a child. It can be, you know, in someone you would not think. And so when you meditate, I feel you get more aware of energy in others and in the world around you, and mainly in yourself and ourselves. We begin to be mindful of our own energy and take responsibility for that too, you know, because if I'm not acting unfriendly, or I'm acting friendly, but I'm internally not liking someone, I'm responsible to that energy of that mismatch, you know, and in a sense of dishonesty, you know, and then how do I move through that, you know, fear of someone that creates a dislike or something, and then I get to be responsible to that and want to be.
Every fallen guru is a blessing in a way, you know, because they point it back to us, don't they? It's like, you know, it wasn't enshrined in that person, you know, it's enshrined in me, and it is in that person, but not in their guru status per se. And so it can be, you know, it's okay to acknowledge that they have they're less than the perfect person we projected them to be, you know, and that, which is doing them a disservice, I think, anyway, because as long as you're embodied in a human form, you know, you're going to have the foibles of being human, aren't you? I think that's the essence there.
Exactly.
On page 31, you say that meditation starts simply by, let me quote the exact quote here. Basically, it's becoming aware and then staying there for a while, right? Just noticing what's going on and staying. And, you know, I think that's the key. It's staying for a while. And we're not doing anything. We're just going to sit. And some people think, oh, my gosh, that's when it gets boring, you know, because I got to be going. I got to be doing things. There's nothing happening. There's nothing happening in meditation. But that's that's the point. As I went to a Buddhist retreat one time, and he said, well, you know, we've all heard about the born-again Christians, but we are the born again Buddhists, and I like that idea. You know, you have to break through the barrier of boredom, you know, into this epiphany that you're talking about, right? It's but unless you're willing to put up with what's seemingly boring to the ego, you're not going to break through into that larger space of meditation practice.
Right, and one of the things I say in the book is, meditation is, practice of meditation is ordinary, and the practice of being in that ordinary state. And then I make examples like the sound of a newborn's cry, you know, which is ordinary, but of course it's extraordinary. And if you're present to, you know, the dancer, or you're present to the sound of the music, or you're present to your breath, the ordinariness of the breath, or the boredom, even people might say, is sacred. And you meet that place because of your willingness to stand in that, our willingness to stand in that place of looking for the sacred and finding it.
Yes. And again, it's one of those conundrums and paradoxes of existence, isn't it? That what can be the most earth-shatteringly marvelous thing to us is ho-hum to somebody else, you know, or what can be the most terrible suffering for us is nothing to another. And there's a poem, of course, by W.H. Auden, you know, when he was in Musée des Beaux-Arts in Brussels, he saw images of suffering going on, and right next to the suffering there's a horse scratching his behind, and there's a man plowing his field and whatnot. And, you know, life goes on, right? Even if we lose a loved one, the universe doesn't stop for a second to say, oh dear, that's terrible. It just carries straight on, and we have to deal with that. It can seem like a cruel world, but on the other hand, God is offering us whatever we want to take from it at any given moment, right? It's a free will choice, and that's the beauty of it, I guess, really.
Right. Now, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's presence to the now.
Yeah, that's right. Whatever's showing up, right?
Yeah.
And what we choose to make of it.
Right, because everything's perception in a way, right? What I think about, we could all be looking at the same thing and really coming with very different conclusions about it.
Right.
So for me, it's like I just live through my heart. I always am looking and hearing and seeing and speaking and touching and anything from my heart as best as I can, right? And that's that part that's the responsibility of mine, to pay attention to whether I'm in my heart or my ego or my fear, basically. And where is this coming from? Am I trying to show off, or am I trying to, you know, even now, you know, I don't want to sound important or anything. You know, it's like that innocent place of just being real.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, very, very good. And I just had a mind freeze there. I had a great idea and it went. I think that probably came because, am I trying to be impressive? And God said, I'm going to take everything out of your head, so there's nothing to be impressive about. There we go.
Yeah.
Instant karma right there.
Well, then you're meditating, though, right? In a way, because there's no, you know, identification to the ego.
There we go. I'll put a nice gloss on it like that. But, you know, the tragedy, I know what the thought was. I was going to say the tragedy is that, you know, when we, you know, have an interpretation and we say, well, mine is the only right interpretation. You know, if I'm looking at a picture and I see something in it, no, that's the only way you all should see it. And that's fundamentalism in action. You know, it's forcing everybody to think the same way that you do. And whether that's East or West or Muslim or Christian or whatever it shows up, you know, it's still the same kind of mind-numbing consciousness that is the opposite of what we're talking about, right? Meditation that you're talking about is exactly what you say in the title, you know, opening to meditation. I think that's key. You know, everything else otherwise is closed. And we don't want to be in a closed system. We want to be in an open field where we can explore the freedom of this. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes. I use sometimes in a meditation class, I have everybody make fists, you know, with their hands.
Yeah.
And just kind of hold like that and just, you know, and talk about, and I make them hold it for some minutes, you know, so they just feel the tension of holding on tight, holding on fast to who we are, what we think, my opinions, you know, what, you know, you liking me, me liking you, you know, whatever it is, all that stuff, and you're holding, and then finally, you know, giving yourself the relief of letting go, of not needing or being attached to anything where, you know, you need it to be a certain way, you need this to happen like this, or, you know, something terrible will happen, and you start to move into a motion of acceptance versus resignation. Which
yes.
is really, really different, you know?
I like the point there, you know, because they could be misinterpreted as the same thing, you know, if we're not really paying attention. But they're very different, aren't they?
They look a lot alike.
Yeah, they look a lot alike.
One's empowering, one's disempowering.
Right, exactly, yeah. It's like the phrase, nothing matters, you know. It could be interpreted like, well, it's a fatalistic viewpoint, you know, the nihilistic viewpoint. But on the other hand, nothing really matters in the sense that we, in the way that our ego would have it. So in that sense, that is true too. So it depends how we approach it. Yeah. Interesting stuff. All right. We're at the second break. I'm with Diana Lang. Get this book, folks. You're going to enjoy it. It's called Opening to Meditation, A Gentle Guided Approach. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the commonly asked questions that people ask about meditation when we come back. All right, join us then.
We are all on the journey together, making sense of this life, finding our spirituality, growing and evolving. As we travel through this world, Unity Magazine is your resource for gaining a deeper understanding of life. Unity Magazine is on the forefront of spiritual discovery, with articles and features from leading authors, teachers, and philosophers. Stimulate your thinking and strengthen your spirituality with Unity Magazine. Sample a free trial issue or subscribe today at unitymagazine.org.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Now back to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to segment three of our show today. I'm with Diana Lang, and we're talking about her book, Opening to Meditation. We've covered a lot of ground already, but there's a nice section in the book called Common Questions That Are Often Asked. And, of course, how long should I meditate? And the famous answer is 20 minutes, right? That's what I was told when I first started meditating back in the 70s or whatever. But, of course, it's not that, is it? It's you can meditate for a minute, and get something out of it. You can meditate for a number of hours, but I think the point is, you know, enough time to shift, isn't it? There's a shift.
Yes. I've lost you.
Diana?
Yes.
I think I lost you. Did you carry on talking while I was gone?
No, I just stopped. The whole thing just went dead for a minute.
Yeah, I got my phone on not disturbed, but it still disturbed me. I don't know why. Anyway, here we go. We're back in the this segment. So since we're pre-recording, he can mess with it.
Perfect.
And make it right. What I was saying was, I think about time, right? It's not the amount
of time. Yeah, how long?
Yeah, it's the ability to shift our attention from distraction to a more focused awareness.
Right, so it's quality, not quantity, right? When you touch that space, you know it. That's why I put meditations with the book that you can download on MP3 files or, you know, just go on your computer, because I give audio meditations, three of them in the book, because I wanted people to experience a meditational state. And it's so much easier when you're guided in the beginning, especially because we don't know what that state is, and we're thinking about balancing the checkbook and what's for dinner and, you know, a conversation we had last year, you
right.
know, rather than being in the moment. So what happens with a guided meditation is very helpful at any time, but especially in the beginning, to learn what it feels like to be in state.
To feel like what it means to be what?
In state.
This
little phrase I'm using. It, to be in yeah. energetic state of openness and peaceful inner mind.
Yes.
And that silence, that inner silence. Because people are afraid of that silence, you know?
Absolutely.
So we fill it up. Yeah.
So
those words just kind of carry them through. And so they can start to feel that place and feel the safety of that place and sort of the love of that place, you know, and touch their own inner essence and start to build that relationship that meditation helps you do very quickly, you know. And in terms of time, it is about the depth of the touch. And to me, spiritual time versus human time, that, you know, we want to stay for an hour or long times, even 20 minutes can be a very long time for a new meditator, it is.
Right.
It is just touching that place for a moment will change your life. I mean, a moment, because that moment, that nanosecond even, of the purity of that place will affect the life. That's how powerful touching spirit is.
Right. The Sufis say, I think, you know, one clear moment, and that's all it takes, is that that's what we're aiming for. That can make all the difference, can't it? Because we do live in a timeless universe, and so one moment of clarity of that timelessness is all that it takes to shift everything. And I agree with that. And in the mystical moments or aha moments I've experienced in my life, I would say that that's absolutely true. You know, a lot of people,
and
though,
the more
say,
you kind of try to get to that place, probably
right.
the more it repels away. You know, it's the efforting doesn't actually help. It's just the relaxation, the allowing of that experience, you know. But if we keep trying to get there and read one more book or go to one more class or all those kinds of things, we can actually miss that by our effort.
Well,
because it's
like
the ego trying to win or solve it or be smart or, you know.
It's like the man approaching the Zen master and asked him how many years will it take me to become enlightened, and Zen master says 7, and the guy says, well, wait a minute, what happens if, because he thinks that's a long time, what happens if I really try hard, you know, do everything possible? He said 14. Going to take twice as long.
Yes.
Which is exactly right. What you're saying, isn't it? You know, it's a
exactly.
It's a stupid question to ask anyway. Just pick 7 out of the blue, you know, because
right.
you can't say how long it's going to take.
I think in my book I write another joke that's just that same style, which says, if you can't sit for 20 minutes, then sit for 2 hours.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Yeah.
In the same vein.
Yeah, same idea.
It's not about the time, right? It's about the actual essence, touching spirit.
Yes. You know, another thing that people have a real problem with, and like you say, they fear, and we fear, I shouldn't say they, there's no them and us, as they, we're all in this together. We fear the stillness sometimes, you know, that what's going to happen if I give up all my usual thinking. And many of us say, well, I can't stop thinking. You know, that's one of the reasons I can't really enjoy meditation, as I can't shut my mind up. So what's your advice on that?
Well, you know, I talk a lot about that, actually, because that's a big subject, and sort of the main subject when you first start to meditate is how do I quiet my mind? And my students come to me in secret and say, you know I must be doing something wrong because I've been thinking all the time, and I laugh because that's all that that's the mind is a thought-making machine, you know? Its function is to think, and so you can't turn it off, and you don't need to turn it off. You're looking for those spaces in between, though. You know, those little spaces in between the breaths, in between the thoughts, into that timelessness that is between those spots and those thoughts. But the mind is for sure going to generate, and even a practiced meditator is going to be thinking much of their meditation, but you're still looking for those little openings like windows.
Right. And I like the on the London Underground, there's a very wise spiritual saying, as you get off the train, it says, mind the gap. And, so if we're mindful of the gap, you know, between thoughts, then that's the place where we can find stillness. So those Londoners should be enlightened, shouldn't they? They're constantly minding the gap.
That sign is everywhere. I used to live in London. That's hilarious. It's everywhere. That's really good.
Yeah.
Mind the gap. Or don't mind the gap, in a sense, too. You could say, you know, don't mind it because it's the gap. You know, it's love the gap.
Yeah, love the gap. That's right. But, you know, somebody told me to think of it as clouds passing in the sky. You know, the sky is your free natural mind, and the clouds are the thoughts that come and go. You know, if you become enamored of a cloud, then you're going to miss the point. You just let the cloud be what it is and pass through. Another one will replace it. But ultimately, when we have a relaxed attitude towards them, you know, the clouds fade out, it seems, and you've got more of that spaciousness that seems to fill your being. And they don't become a problem. Another cloud comes, you know, that's okay. I'm not resisting it. I've always found that to be a helpful analogy to you know, slowing my mind down and not being so perturbed by my thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, I love the word you use, spaciousness. Mm. You know, that and creating spaciousness in the self, right?
Yes.
There's room and there's opening and there's awareness in that spaciousness, and creating, kind of cultivating that state of spaciousness is a beautiful thing. It's a great way to say it.
Right. You know, I went to a meditation teacher one time and said, you know, I'm getting all these colors and images, and I know I feel like I'm getting, all, you know, so many breakthroughs and wonderful scenes and this, that, and the other. And I said, is this good? It sounds good, doesn't it? And he just looked at me and he said, I trust it's for the benefit of all concerned. And it was like, whoa. The pin in my bubble, you know, it was gone. My bubble was gone. It's like, what's it mean? It doesn't matter to darn, does it, whether I've got lots of lights and colors and scenes. You know, how is that a benefit to anybody? It was a sort of a false caress or whatever, and going in the wrong direction, if you like. And you know, it's nice to have those colorful experiences, but that's not really what we're going for, is it?
Well, exactly. That can be a distraction to it, actually, another kind of level of mind, of creative mind and imagination, of course, and there's nothing wrong with that, and wonderful ideas can happen in that bandwidth, in a sense.
Yes.
But the meditation experience happens at another level yet that's even deeper still, and so you're trying to even drop through that bandwidth, which is a wonderful one, great for art and music and ideas. And I often will touch that place, but when you're meditating, you're like dissolving even that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You know, mind play.
Right, yeah, exactly. So we have a minute or so left. What would you like to leave with us today that we haven't covered so far?
Oh, well, I guess the main thing I would love to remind everybody is that meditation can be easy, and that ultimately it's all about love. And it's the cultivation and nurturing of that in the self and in the life. It's love and self-acceptance, and so that we can accept another. And that the bottom line is it's a heart love thing. And that this book can give you the tools in a very, very simple way that you can do right away and have an experience of that state of love. and that love is all there is, you know, and we're all kind of connected by love. And when we're not in love, we're in some sort of fear. And as we learn to live in that place more and more, you know, we'll feel better. Depression gets less, our energy gets more, our creativity is greater, etc.
Yes, very good. So it's really doing ourselves a favor, isn't it? It's something natural and easy we can do that is going to be extremely beneficial on all levels of our being, whether it be, you know, physical health or emotional well-being, and certainly on our spiritual path. But in relationships, at work, I think it's efficacious in all those areas. So folks, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Diana. Next week's show, Christian Buddhist teacher Brother Chi Singh speaks with me about his valiant journey through cancer in this past year and all that he's learned. And he continues to teach even in spite of this life-threatening disease. So it's a wonderful example of meditation in action, actually, I think. But I want to thank Diana Lang. And Diana, if people want to get hold of you, have you got a website and stuff?
Yeah, just dianalang.com. And all kinds of stuff is on my website. They can download meditations. I've got hundreds of meditations on there that are free on every subject. And I also do world service meditations once a month by telephone. They can join in that. You know, there's a lot of things that are available for people that would like to try to meditate. And just even in 5 minutes, this is my last little thing I want to say, just five minutes,
there
meditate for 2 weeks in a row and watch what happens.
Yeah, there we go. So go for it, guys. Let's see if we can do it. All right, but I really appreciate you being on the show. It's been a wonderful experience, so thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thanks for listening, folks, and hope to see you over the air next week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Somewhere, tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity Radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity Radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
Inspiration only takes a moment. Take a moment now to reflect on these words from Reverend Joan Gattuso. According to an ancient Hindu teaching, if you can only speak the truth and tell no lies, either minuscule or outrageous, for 12 consecutive years, you can attain enlightenment. A noble being will always tell the truth. Do you? Begin now with the first step of simply noticing if you do tell the truth immediately, or if your first instinct is to alter the facts a bit. Resolve to be honest with yourself and others starting today. And after 4,383 days, you just may become enlightened.
This meditative moment is brought to you by Unity.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.